How many people are new to Hacking 101? Oh, wow. We got a lot of virgins here.
I'm leaving.
Okay. We do Hacking 201 tomorrow night in the EFF track room. And it starts at 10 o'clock and pretty much runs until we run out of alcohol or pass out. The thing is, of course, yeah, you're in the South now, so y'all can't buy booze on Saturday. I mean, on Sunday. Pardon me. Yeah, again, I'm getting my days mixed up here. You can't buy booze on Sunday. So what we do is I'm Johnny X. I'm the guy who runs the science track, and I've been involved with the EFF track for ages. I'm your friend, and we pass around a big collection bucket, and I will buy your alcohol for you, and we'll have a hell of a lot of booze at Hacking 201 tomorrow. So I'll get this out of the way now.
I'd suggest passing it around, but it'll never get all the way back. Oh, I guess he is. Guess I'm not the only one with a silly idea.
We didn't say fill it with booze.
No, or anything else. Nothing else. No liquids in there, okay?
I don't know if you got anything interesting and weird that's not organic to drop in there. That's
money.
Cool.
Dinero.
Let's have a little bit of structure and introduce ourselves, and we'll start with you since you're actually one of the professional people.
Hi, I'm Randall Schwartz. This is my 10th year at Dragon Con, so been a lot of fun. I wouldn't miss it for the world. And you know, the moment they open the applications to be a guest again, I apply like that day, and then they don't tell me for 4 months if I've made it past the very narrow cutoff. But apparently, they like me. I haven't thrown anybody off the balcony. I think that's why I get to keep coming back. Just as a slight bit of introduction, how many people have one of my books?
Yes, it changed my life.
Seriously?
Yes.
Cool. All right. Success story. Camels, llamas, alpacas, and pecunias.
What books would those be, Randall?
That would be Learning Perl, Programming Perl, Learning Perl for Win32, Effective Perl Programming, with a preface to Object-Oriented Perl, and as you can see, there's a theme. And Perls of Wisdom, my collected columns. I have over 255 magazine articles, too, so. Lots of stuff on Perl. But also, the other way people are now knowing me is how many people listen to my podcast, Floss Weekly? There we go. If you haven't heard that, if you're into open source, check it out. It's at twit.tv/floss. And every week I get to interview really cool people. And if you've listened to the show, you know that that's exactly true. We have a great time. It's a fun show to do. So that's probably enough of an intro for me. Cool. Thanks.
I'm Kerbob. That's my handle. Actually, my name's... Damn.
Thank you.
Change. Actually, my name's Richard Curry, so my docs were dropped a long time ago, so it doesn't matter. I'm actually one of the founders of the Hackerspace here in Atlanta, and I...
URL.
Freeside Atlanta. Thank you. FreesideAtlanta.org, I guess it is.
Cool.
Google Freeside Atlanta.
And I'm also... I also put on CarolinaCon, which is a hacker convention in Raleigh, North Carolina, every year. This last year was our 7th year. We had around 250, close to 300 people. So,
see, we got to kick DragonCon's ass anytime now.
Yeah, getting there.
It's getting there.
So what is a hackerspace? Says I innocently.
Shit.
Do we need to Google it for you?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a Wikipedia entry.
Google is your friend.
If not, there will be in a few minutes.
All right. I'm sorry.
It's a hackerspace / makerspace. So what we've done is we've rented out 5,500 square feet in downtown Atlanta, and we filled it with anything from woodworking tools to welders. We have a hangout space. We have a space just for if you want to sit there and code. And we do weekly classes. So you may want to come in and learn welding. So we've got a guy that teaches welding. And all we ask is for a donation for the class. And you can see our class schedule on the website. And you can become a member over time as the other members get to know you. But it's just a place to collaborate with other people, learn things that you didn't know.
Do you have a MakerBot?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
We have a MakerBot, which it's a 3D printer, if you don't know what that is.
And I did a Floss Weekly.
We have a talk on that on the science track coming up.
Yes.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes, it's tomorrow,
awesome.
I think. And we also have a CNC, a large homemade one, and all kinds of crap. You'll have to come see us. We have a meeting on Tuesdays at 7 o'clock, and the public's welcome to come.
Freeside, Atlanta is an absolutely amazing place. I've had a chance to see it a few times, and I would like to live there. If you are interested in any type of do-it-yourself projects and you want to get other people to help you who would be interested in it, science, biohacking, biopunk, hardware, software, whatever, it's absolutely amazing and makes me wish I still lived here in Atlanta, despite the traffic. So, my name is Drew Myers. A lot of people know me as Johnny X. I'm back up in Nashville at the moment taking care of family and not doing a whole lot very interesting, but in the past, I started a hacker convention up there called Freaknik, and for some reason they thought it might be interesting to bring people from Freaknik and hackers in general down to DragonCon back in the mid-90s and talk about that. So I helped start the EFF track. I currently run the space track. We used to be space and science. Apparently there's an interest in this type of programming at DragonCon, so space and science and skeptics went from one track of programming in a room that held 50 to we now pretty much fill one wing of the Hilton and rooms like this. So I'm glad you find us entertaining and possibly educational enough to continue attending these events. I'm sure the booze has nothing to do with it that we give you for free on various other days and at other panels. And basically I'm a con rat, and I'm into social engineering, and all these guys here are a hell of a lot smarter than me. I just talk a good show when I'm sober. So
what you say?
Hi, I'm Chad Ramey. I'm 18, currently a freshman at Georgia Tech in nuclear and radiological engineering. This device over to my left, your right, I suppose, is a fusion reactor that I've made. I like building big experimental physics machines. So this is my best creation. So, yeah.
As we like to say, it's a fusion reactor built by a teenager from spare parts, bought off eBay, and he brought it to the con. What could possibly go wrong?
Is that unlicensed technology? I just
no,
want to know.
Licensed.
It's licensed. Yeah. Okay, good.
There was a federal marshal here earlier.
Yes. So this is where the social engineering comes in, because, yeah, the guy in the full outfit with, you know, the hat who looks like the drill instructor from Full Metal Jacket comes to the door near the end of Evil Geniuses for a Better Tomorrow and hears us ranting about the fusion reactor, and no, we're not letting the D&D people in yet, even though their panel's getting ready to start soon because we're still taking apart the fusion reactor. And so he kind of gives me that look and says, fusion reactor. Yes, sir, but it's been licensed and inspected by multiple federal agencies, and we've got the licensing stickers on it if you'd like to come in and see it. He said, no, that's all I needed to hear. You made my job a lot easier. He turned around and walked off.
Nice.
Yeah, I just finished off one of the super strength margaritas they'd made during that panel, and it was kicking in too. So
Johnny, you're going to start with the definition of hacking, because I actually had on the ride way down here in the elevator, I said I'm going to hacking 101, and she looks at me like, you mean like slash fiction, like Freddy Krueger stuff? And I said, no, and I had to explain it to her. So you want to go ahead and do your normal explanation of what hacking is?
All right. We use hacking in the original non-criminal sense of the word, which is people who like to explore complex systems. Usually it means computer systems, but not always. There are people who like to do biological hacking. The biopunks is what they call them. It's an excellent book, by the way, called Biopunk. It just came out about 6 months ago about the movement. And people who like to explore complex systems, learn how they work, especially if they're not documented particularly well, sometimes figure out how to use and manipulate the systems better than the people who created them. And if they can do it in a funny and educational way, all the better. And to be truly hacking, it has to be about exploration and sharing information and non-destructive. So that's what we're about. If you came here to learn how to steal credit card numbers or send people Viagra spam, I have fresh batteries for the cattle prod. And and by the way, Devils is a Klingon sex toy, and it's $1 a hit if anybody wants one. It's better than caffeine. So,
good questions?
Now what? I guess
thank
we should
you.
Take some questions. Yeah, thank you for attending. We've got the wireless mic there, and who's going to be mic bitch for us and run the mic around? There you go. All right. Well, okay. Hacking 201 tomorrow. Make sure you see me at the end of this panel, and we will give you the special secret invite to keep you properly intoxicated throughout the rest of the con.
Is he old enough?
You don't know who he is.
Is he old enough?
I don't. Now, one thing just to clear up, if someone wants booze later on at Hacking 201, for instance, the legal drinking age is 21. So, of course, when I ask you on the honor system, are you of legal drinking age in the state of Georgia? The answer is.
Yeah. There we
Louder,
go.
Louder, please.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, questions.
That's a contract.
Come on, who's got questions? Anyone? Winnie? Raise your hand. Don't be shy. All the way on the other side of the room.
Run, Forrest, run.
Run!
Forrest.
Good game. Next person over there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh,
thank
good.
You, sir. Appreciate it.
Okay. H is an O's. H is an O's.
We couldn't do it without these guys.
Thank you.
I'd like to hear more about this fusion reactor.
A little bit louder, please. Cool.
Is it Farnsworth Hirsch?
Yes, it is modeled after the Farnsworth Hirsch design. I've taken a lot of inspiration from their traditional Farnsworth designs.
It's a Farnsworth? Really?
Yeah, Farnsworth fusion reactor.
How do you make a call? He doesn't get it. He didn't watch the show.
I didn't
Warehouse
hear what
13.
You said.
Warehouse 13, come on.
I didn't hear what you said.
Warehouse 13, you don't watch that
show?
Oh,
no, sorry. The only TV show I'm addicted to currently is Doctor Who.
Kids these
Any
days.
Any fans? Yeah. See, they know
Thank
where
you.
It's at.
Apparently.
It's modeled after the traditional Farnsworth design and the fact that the main electrode is a lot larger than most of the Hirsch designs are. I'm focusing a lot on research that is all about scaling the main electrode on the inside of the chamber. I'll be actually doing a presentation on just the reactor at 8:30 to 9:30 in room 202 upstairs. And if we have time during this panel, I'll go over and do a brief demonstration concerning the number of gamma rays produced on this versus a piece of uranium that I have in the box back here.
So. We're charging $5 per 30 seconds for anyone who wants to stand next to it and maybe develop superpowers, and $10 per lick. So. If there's anyone
That's
from
an
Tech
exciting
Ops,
experiment.
Anyone from Tech Ops here in the room, before we start experimenting with feedback, you want to crank up the wireless mic volume for us? Otherwise, we'll just start playing with it and see what happens. Okay. Next question. Raise your hand over here.
He's going to lose 10 pounds.
You guys are so much more calmer and more sedate and polite than
Where'd
the last
Where'd the money
crowd.
Jug go?
Why?
You could put your bag down.
I have stuff that's not changed. Where did the money jug go?
I'm watching it. It's working its way around the back.
Okay.
I'll answer that. It's back there.
Don't worry, it has an RFID chip.
If someone tries to take it out the door, you will see me leap over this table with the cattle prod.
We're tracking it via RFID anyway. No problem. We'll find it.
Okay.
So have you guys played with FreeNAS yet? Have you played with FreeNAS yet?
FreeNAS?
I
have
not.
About it.
Tell us about it, please.
I've only heard about it.
FreeNAS is, I believe, a BSD-based storage solution. It's done by... Who the hell does it?
Oh, network-attached storage. Network-attached storage.
Yeah.
Based on... Wait, what branch of BSD?
Off the top of my head, FreeBSD. And then it's also using the Solaris kernel in there, too, to get ZFS in there.
No. You don't need the Solaris kernel to get ZFS
and
FreeBSD. It's natural now.
All right, because last time I was watching
You might be confusing that with the Linux solution that uses ZFS by gluing the whole ZFS inside and putting glue layers in so they can get around the GPL. Pretty crazy way to do that. Yes, exactly. I know FreeBSD supports ZFS, yes. I have FreeBSD running on 5 servers,
Anyway, my question is, I've got 22 terabyte drives in a RAID Z2 and ZFS.
Cool.
And I'm only getting 60 to 100 megabits a second on throughput on lag connection.
Well, that's one of the reasons I didn't go with it, because when I started looking into it, there were so many different opinions on this hardware works better, this hardware works better. And as I got deeper into it, I found it, I just went out and bought something. So, I mean, I love the whole thought of doing the hack, putting this together, creating it myself. But there's just times when it's almost like the group doesn't have the entire act together. And when I'm reading so many different opinions, I just went somewhere else.
Well, I keep breaking Drobos. It's got two Intel NICs.
And that's just so I'm clear, that's exporting the ZFS over an NFS mount then, or some other way to attach?
I have it mounted via iSCSI.
Oh, okay. Cool. That should be better. But
yeah, so it's over iSCSI over two gigabit connections merged together. So
it should work better, but who knows? Obviously, you're up against something.
Okay.
I'm so smart.
I'm guessing hardware.
I can show you the list later.
All right. Cool. Good question. Like a technical question. Wow.
Yeah. We still get those occasionally.
Yep. In spite of me being here. Yes.
This is for the whole panel. For each of you, which do you feel is the next big problem or next big puzzle that you'd all like to hack? Not necessarily computer science, but you know, social engineering thing maybe. The next big thing each of you would like to hack.
I'd like to hack the government and get it all sorted out because I certainly don't have any good plan. And the two guys coming in that have the black sunglasses, sorry.
I'm going to pass on that.
All right, actually,
one down, nine to go.
Yeah, while taking care of family, which part of that involves cleaning up after 24 Toto dogs every morning. Thank God I'm on vacation right now. When I return to school, I'm going back into epigenetics, and frankly, one of the problems I would like to work on is the stuff Aubrey de Grey was talking about last year in Hacking 101 and 201, the life extension technology, simple genetic tweaks. Man, I would like a few more decades of healthy, active life. I think everyone here could agree with that.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Definitely.
So Aubrey de Grey, SENS, S-E-N-S, look it up if you haven't heard about it. It's amazing stuff, and I think it's going to have a just as huge an impact in probably the lives of everyone here in this room as other discoveries like penicillin and basic sanitation have had for the human race in general.
Awesome. The past couple of years, I've been working on just simple things to get efficiency gains out of IEC reactors. But as for the next big thing that I'm looking towards, I would really like to have a particle accelerator in my garage. So, hopefully something along that lines.
What do you think? Freeside down for that?
Yeah. We've got some space, but I actually thought of one thing, and it's not world-changing like these guys, but one thing that I did see at DEF CON that I thought was pretty cool is this group, they were working with botnets, and they were controlling them over the VoIP lines. So you would see no network traffic, and they would the botnet would dial into a conference call where you would also dial into, and you would send it all its instructions through that, or you could take your instructions using the old school modem technology.
Yeah, I was just gonna
change
say.
It. Yeah, change it into music and leave it as a message on your Google voicemail.
Whoa!
And then it dials into your Google voicemail, and it gets the instructions. And I just thought that was kind of cool, and it's something I want to play with.
Keith, are you doing any botnet talks at DragonCon EFF track this year? He has one of the coolest jobs ever. He's the guy who goes after bad guy hackers and takes away their toys. Use the mic.
I would use my technology for good. Mike Slave.
You know, his name might not be Mike. I don't know. I work at Georgia Tech in the College of Computing, and we have some fun researchers there. Anybody else from Georgia Tech? All right. Yeah, you guys get A's on your final. Okay, so we have a couple of really cool projects, one of which is we have a project that steals botnets from organized crime. And the way they do it is they have this tar pit, and it just kind of keeps this conversation going with the bot. And now, unfortunately, how do you get the bot to actually call you instead of the bot master? Well, that's simple. Bots generate a lot of DNS traffic, which really annoys ISPs and DNS operators. So in collusion with them, they redirect the IP to us. All your bots are belong to us. So what happens is this process sits there and just keeps a conversation going. Now, if we stop talking to them, they go to the next one in their program list, and they run off to some other bot master, right? So if you turn it off, it's kind of like Ghostbusters when you turn off the containment field. Well, it's a sponsored project. And the I won't name the sponsor, but their government, three-letter acronym. And one hand does not talk to the other. So one day we get a call from them. You have a bot master on your network. Please turn it off immediately. It's controlling one of our government networks. And we're trying to explain to them, you really don't want us to turn it off. So unfortunately, we finally got a case number. So now when they call, we just say, talk to that guy. Now, the only problem is this system is not on a UPS. So every time the lights flicker, yeah. So if one day suddenly all your machines wake up at once, sorry, it might have been a power outage.
You should put it on a laptop, and then it would just run off the battery for 5 or 6 hours until the battery comes back.
It's a whole rack.
Oh, okay. Wow.
It's a big laptop. Yeah.
I gotta go, dude.
Since right. This is Hacking 101, what would be a good way to get started into specifically computer hacking?
Get involved with local hacker or maker groups. Are you local to Atlanta?
No.
Where do you live?
Knoxville, Tennessee.
I'm sorry. unfortunately, there's not a whole lot out there. A lot of the people in Knoxville come to the Nashville meetings. Yeah. You're going to have to drive 4 hours each way once a month, I think. Yeah. What? Yeah? Huh?
DC 949.
Okay.
Or the 2600.
Start your own group. Start one locally. Start advertising, putting up flyers in around schools, universities, computer stores, parties, what? You know, geek gatherings. Who else lives in Knoxville? Anyone? No? Yeah, okay, well, yeah, okay, that guy, and I assume he came with you, right? Yeah, okay, it may be a little tough, but get that initial, yeah. Build it and they will come.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
You'd be surprised that a lot of the meetings, say 2600 or the DC groups, you could start your own, and it doesn't have to be something that's got a schedule or anything like that. People just show up and you start talking with each other and you always end up leaving learning something.
And check with local computer clubs and ham radio clubs too. There's a lot of crossover with those groups. And if you get more than a dozen or so people together, rent a hotel room, a conference room, small one somewhere for a weekend, start a small con, see who shows up, spreading through word of mouth and advertising online.
You can also download Backtrack.
Okay, I don't know what that is. Oh.
Download Backtrack and then go to YouTube or Blip TV, and they'll show you how to use all the tools. And a lot of the things, they can either be used for good, for bad, whatever, but it's cool to learn them. You know, it's cool to learn that WEP is so insecure that you can, in 5 minutes, crack your neighbor's password, you know. What was that?
With a cell phone.
And I haven't done that, but that would be sweet ass. But, I mean, and the Backtrack is just a CD of tools, of hacking tools, and it's not just hackers don't use it. Security groups use it, things like that. So, and it's a good tool to just start learning your way around things.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Backtrack actually has a service attached to their website that will teach you security and penetration testing with Backtrack as well.
Yeah, there's a bazillion resources online nowadays, which when I first got in this and we were trying to put groups together back in Nashville in the early 90s didn't exist. So I'm assuming it's a little bit easier now to network and communicate with other people, hopefully.
Yeah.
I guess kind of like staying within that same conversation, what happens if you are local? I mean, what are some kind of groups or places you can go or websites or forums or places where you can,
I think there's
I guess, get started.
Google. That's a good place to go.
Let's give them some specific ones here. The first one I heard about was, of course, 2600 and 2600.com. That's a good place to start.
Is it .com?
.com. Oh, is it .org now?
I think I think it's always been.
I bookmarked it. Yeah. Sorry.
There's a 2600 group here. They meet at the Lenox Mall the first Friday of each month. I don't know how large that group is. And then every third Saturday of the month at 2 o'clock at the
Vortex.
Yes, at the Vortex, they meet, and that's the DC group, the DEF CON group. And they're
not the one at Little Five Points.
Midtown, yes.
Sys.com here.
Is it? Then I'm wrong. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yep. Yep.
I was wrong.
I will take that.
It's not real. It's not on Memorex.
It's been about a year since. Are you local to Atlanta, by the way? You who just asked that question, sir.
Yeah.
Okay. It's been not quite a year since I moved, but the Atlanta 2600 group was dying a slow death, and everyone had pretty much migrated to the DEF CON 404 group. So yep. I would suggest probably starting with that one rather than 2600 or. You may find yourself sitting in Lenox Mall by yourself wondering where everyone is.
That's a great group of guys, too. A lot of security professionals show up there, so if you have any questions, they know their shit. So.
Yeah, are there any members of DC 404 here besides me? Wow. Yeah. Oh, Kerbob, you're a member. So there's several of us. We meet at the Vortex, but they have a very strict you got to be over 18 to be in their thing. And they kind of bent the rules for us for a long time. And we are open to everybody, all age ranges. And so because of that, we're going to have to move, unfortunately. They've been real nice to us, so we're kind of sad to move.
Go to Nashville for Freaknik, the HackerCon that is in its 15th year, I believe. And it's going to be November 4th through 6th, or 2nd through 4th, first weekend in November. And that's a real good place to meet people and network, socialize, and learn stuff.
You think this con's fun? Drunk hackers.
Nashville, Tennessee. It's called Freaknik, PH, as in phone freaking, .info. And I swear to God, when we came up with the name Freaknik, we did not know about the one here in Atlanta with an F. We didn't know.
Yes.
Funny story. When we told the Atlanta group, we figured out the name for the con and we've got it planned. We've already printed stuff up and sent it out and we're calling it Freaknik. And they were like, you're calling it what? And they explained about Freaknik with an F here in Atlanta. And so we said, oh, dear. Well, we don't want to get sued or something. So we actually contacted the Freaknik with an F organizers and said, we're computer geeks. We didn't know. And sent them some con t-shirts, and they said, that's cool. And they sent us some Freaknik with an F t-shirts. And in fact, some of them came up to Freaknik with a P. And it was a lot of fun. Next question.
Yep.
My question's for Randall.
Where are
I was. Oh, hello.
Okay. Hey, right there.
I work at CBeyond Communications, and I have developed their virtualized telephony platform. I was wondering if, being a person who's read probably nearly all your books, if you have any plans to come out with a VoIP book?
Me personally, no. I really am probably not going to write another book unless it really propels my business forward somehow, because the problem with that is, you guys probably don't, you would have heard this a couple weeks ago on Floss Weekly, but writing a book is essentially minimum wage, and I can't afford that time. I'd rather be doing it and actually doing real work for people and making things happen for that. So I'm probably not going to be writing any more books. I have enough to establish my credentials, and I'm glad you got value out of those. But unless it's going to propel my business forward, I really can't justify the year of my life it would take to write another book. Well, I'm only making minimum wage. It's just the economics. It's the economics of technology.
The joke I cracked a couple years ago with Randall on the panel, famous author, pro blah, 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 and I've got pirate copies of all of his books, did not go over very well, and I'm still paying for that one occasionally.
Thank you. There's only two universities that I attribute myself to, and that's one of Randall and Google.
Thank you. It's an honor. Thank you.
Next question. All right, I got one for you guys. Anyone here into interesting and elaborate pranks?
Always.
Like of the MIT type?
Nobody.
Okay.
Nobody.
All right. I want to hear some pranking stories about really cool, elaborate pranks that have been pulled. So who's volunteering?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, wait a minute. We saw a bunch of hands go up and people
They're
are into it.
They're into it. They don't do it.
They're into
All
having
right,
it done to them.
I think Bob here has some interesting social prank stories.
I must say, I've given this man a lot of hard times at Freaknik, a lot of cop visits. I believe before this panel, I've told the story about...
I don't run Freaknik anymore, so I don't care about cop visits. It's entertaining.
Yes, but, well...
I still care about
you do,
them.
You do remember the elevators.
Which ones? Oh, but funny
Every
aside
year
about
that
Freaknik,
I go,
I ran it for the first 5 years. The convention was in existence, and I don't know why, because I was always careful to say, we don't break the hotel, we treat the hotel staff nice. Every single hotel where I held Freaknik has since been torn down and burned.
And the current one should be.
Hey,
I know.
They're very nice to keep us there. Yes. But I think outside of the FCC showing up for WGET radio, I think the best one that would involve us, that brought us together, was when the police showed up for the huge goatsy that apparently was visible by the planes coming in to the Nashville airport.
Okay. So one of the hotels that was torn down was adjacent to Metro Nashville Airport.
Yes.
And we had put in the program booklet very carefully, please do not point high-powered laser beams at approaching or departing aircraft, because we want to be friends with the cops. So no problems there. The way the hotel was laid out, it was kind of odd with the conference rooms. There was one section of wall that was three stories high, had no windows. It was just this big section of wall that I didn't think about in advance, pointed, you could see it from the main approach departure runway in Atlanta. So they went out and had a video projector there and were first just playing video games on it. And then the porn came out. And naturally, I was doing something else in the hotel, not knowing there was three-story-high porn playing on this hotel facing the airport where the airplanes were landing. And then the cops showed up a little while later and asked us to stop it, please. And, apparently some people were scarred upon landing in Atlanta and seeing Goatsy there as their plane was landing and taxiing into the...
Nice. Very nice.
Oops.
I was actually kicked out of Dragon Con for life without ever doing anything because someone over there social engineered and told them that they were me. We got it straightened out, though.
Nice. You're not trespassing if you're invited.
Are you going to make your phone call this year to the gentleman that you've been talking to for the last couple of years? He should be out by now.
So Fuller, where is Scott Jones? Fuller is going to be out before too much longer. He will be here at the next Dragon Con, but I'll let Scott explain it.
Yeah, we're not going to do the phone conversation
today.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
that'd be interesting.
Great. Yeah, we'll let him talk all about his case and because he knows what he can and can't say. But in my humble opinion, it was a bunch of bullshit and he was scapegoated. So there you go. But that's just me. Next question. Oh, I have some more recommended resources for you. These are more of the social engineering, but they're good for inspiration type sources. I'm one of these people who still likes the dead tree printed matter. So here's some book titles for you. Caltech's Greatest Pranks, Volumes 1 and 2, which you can buy through the Caltech bookstore. And MIT has three prank books. And you can also hit, which I don't remember the titles exactly, but you can go to pranks.mit.edu, and oh my God, you will have a braingasm. It's a wonderful site. They have a prank museum up there, so the next time you're in Boston or Cambridge, I recommend stopping by and checking it out.
I got something. How many people in here have a smartphone that can read QR codes? Oh, this is better than I thought then. It's great. So my latest hack, that's my V card on my lock screen. So if I want to come home and introduce myself to you, I just show up here. It's done. No handing, no bumping, no special programs required, just the V card. Cool, huh? Cool. And we've been doing it.
Fuck
works.
That bumping.
Oh, that would be funny, though.
Yeah,
yes.
They're like, oh, I know
him. Goatsy still make the rounds? People use still use that, or are there more horrifying things?
Better than ever.
Someone hacked one of the video phones in Vegas last year, and it had Big Goatsy on it, and they couldn't get it off of there, so the hotel staff had to paste cardboard over the front of it.
That's pretty cool. My other favorite QR hack, and I read this somewhere, so I can't take credit for it. If you read my Google Plus stream, you would have seen this a couple days ago, but apparently somebody's got a T-shirt that has a QR code on it, and the QR code translates to, now who's the bigger nerd?
How many people who have been to Hope up in New York City? A few people. How many people have heard of it? How many people have no idea what I'm talking about? Hope is the 2600 convention they have up in New York City. And if you got about a week to kill and the money to spend in New York City, this is the convention I recommend going to. They have it every other year. The next one's coming up summer of 2012. I'm going to be there. And if you're interested in this kind of stuff, I strongly suggest you check it out. And even if it's not exactly your cup of tea, it's fucking New York City. Go.
It's hackers on planet Earth.
Hacking, right? Yeah, hackers on planet Earth. 2600.com will have all the information about it. They've got, it's a great site with a wealth of resources and lots of archive material. So, questions?
Over here. I noticed the
Mike
wall.
Mike Fitch, where are you? Yeah, okay, there we go.
I noticed the wall of sheep is not up. Where is it, and is it coming up this year, or has it been already addressed?
It's in the other room.
Oh, it's in the other room.
EFF track room.
You're not doing it in this room.
Yeah.
Yeah, EFF track room. Yeah.
Okay.
Let him explain what it is.
For those in here who might not know what it is, can you explain what it is?
Can you explain what it is?
Give it to the man.
Yeah, give it to the man.
Oh, Mike boy.
The one that gets paid to hack.
Yep.
Okay. If anybody been to DEF CON or Black Hat? Okay. Well, those who haven't, they have wireless networks there, and they have a poster, about 4x8 poster, that gives about this much instructions how to connect to the net, and the rest is in stuff saying, you really don't want to. And what they do is they put up an open wireless, but they're monitoring all the traffic, and they're doing things like FireSheep and EtherCap and Hamster and Ferret. And what these utilities do is pull credentials out, and then they project them on this gigantic projection screen. So now we're nice. We cover up all but the first three characters of your password. They don't.
They do now.
Oh, they do. They finally did. Oh, too bad. So now I do this wall of sheep thing. We use the Backtrack 5. Release 1 is the CD we're using right now. Although there's a problem if you install Synaptic, when it doesn't update, it breaks EtherCap because it rolls a patch in that's out of sequence. But if you use the one that came with it, it works fine. But it'll just capture credentials, and you go to IronGeek's website and you get the code to do the nice display. It's all pretty cut and dried. So pretty much everybody in here is now Uber hacker.
Yeah.
Now, I go to conferences and do this wall of sheep, and this one particular educational conference, I had it up on the wall, and I was being very nice, and I had asterisks over all the password. And this teacher comes up and says, that's not my password. You didn't get my password. And I said, no, I covered it up. I didn't want to give it to all the 14-year-olds here. You know, they own you. And he says, no, there's no asterisks in my password.
There is now.
No. Yeah. So at that point, I said, fine. there's your whole password. Oh my goodness, he got my password. So what we do, the goal is this. We want you to be safe online and to use secure protocols. And if I'm doing this, that means anybody else with a radio can basically do this. You're broadcasting in the air on a wireless network. Anybody can pick this up. By the way, anybody have any idea what the record is for range for picking up a wireless broadcast, Wi-Fi?
120
no,
miles.
26 miles. They did between two craters in Hawaii. Totally cool. Nice. With satellite dishes. So you may not even know they're listening to you. So I highly recommend you protect yourselves. Now, we do this every year and put it up there. The idea is someday I'd love to come to a con, turn it on for the entire con, and get nothing. That's your challenge.
DEF CON this year, there were only like five or six because people are starting to get smarter. But as soon as I walk into a con, the first thing I do, shut off wireless, shut off Bluetooth.
Keith says something very important, that anyone could set this up and now you're all master hackers. One of the most important things about hacking, again, original non-criminal sense, of course, is play. And do not be afraid to make mistakes, because you'll usually learn more from your mistakes than you will from your successes. At least that's what I say, because Lord knows I've screwed up all sorts of fun things, but that's how I learn from them. And do not be afraid to make mistakes. Just get out there and try stuff and see what works and what doesn't.
You can always format.
Yeah. Yeah. Make sure you've got backups of your important data first, though. Next question.
This is a total noob question, but can you give a review, either positive or negative, of hackthissite.org?
Is it the one that I'm thinking of where they've got these puzzles that kind of progress in difficulty? And yeah, it's a good place to start. I mean, the very first ones are very, very basic, but as you get going, they get more advanced. And if you can't figure something out at first and then spend several days learning how to hack through to the next step, then you know you've learned something. So mission accomplished. That's what the site's trying to do, is to teach you. And it's, you know, you go through and examine the code for the pages and figure out why they're doing works the way it does and how to crack it.
They were actually a sponsor for CarolinaCon 1 year, and so they sponsored our Capture the Flag contest. If you don't know, Capture the Flag in the hacker sense is what we do is we set up a server. It may be, you know, XP, Windows, whatever, 2000, and the object of the game is your team needs to hack into that server. But then once you hack into the server, you have to secure that server from the other groups. So you not only learn how to hack into it, but then as you're patching it and blocking different ways, the other groups have to figure out how to get around that. And so their site works with some of those things, and I think it's a pretty good site.
If anybody's interested in playing with stuff to see how a lot of these hacks works and not getting arrested doing it, you can go to the OWASP site. That's OWASP. Just go to Google, type that in. That's the Open Web Application Security Project. And they have all kinds of free tools. One of the really cool ones is this tool you download. It's written in Java. You run it. It creates a virtual machine. And it actually has lessons to explain how cross-site scripting and SQL injection works. And it's really cool when you go in and like delete the database.
Yeah,
and when
yeah.
you quit, it comes back.
Yeah. Keith has made another really good point. Not getting arrested is something you should strive for. And one of the reasons for the original hacking back in, depending on which area you're looking at, in 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, started with phones and stuff like that before going into computers and personal computers, was access. Even back in the mid to late 1980s, not very many people had access to high-speed communications. The internet was way smaller than it is now. Go back far enough, that it wasn't even the internet. It was ARPANET or a whole bunch of smaller networks that maybe had connections and maybe didn't. Computers weren't that particularly powerful, and people didn't have access to a lot of source code. We've got that now. It's not out of the range of most people to have fast network communications, hardware that people would drool over in as little as 10 years ago, and you've got access to all this source code now, so there's no reason to go out and break into other systems to learn and experiment. You can get a decently powered box, download the software yourself, and run virtual machines and see both ends of attacking and defending and on your own box. Or a friend's box, you know, set up a network, have a weekend party, and hack each other's machines.
And actually, you just brought up a really great point, is that if you're into software, the amount of open source software out there that does some really complex, cool things is just immense. I wish I had this back when I was starting, because it's just, you know, grab the Linux kernel, read every line of it. You know, that's, it's going to take you a while, but at least you'll have a real understanding of how operating systems work.
It's not just software, it's hardware too. The FreeSide, the Maker Labs, they're springing up everywhere. Even the bio people, the biopunks I'd mentioned earlier, they're mainly West Coast and Harvard-Boston area right now. MIT, Harvard in the Boston area right now. But there are groups out there, mailing list websites, are putting together toolkits of basic DNA blocks to use over and over again. And they've got open source software they're using to do their biohacking, and there are even open source hardware projects that are being made available by these groups, and they're doing amazing things with them. A little kit about like this that's $10, and you can go down and do cheap genetic testing in places like Argentina or Brazil, way out in the boonies where malaria is still a problem and kills people, and you can go out with one of these little boxes and test thousands and thousands of people and figure out who needs to be inoculated and who doesn't. It's changing lives. So it's, you know, hacking in the positive sense applies to just about anything these days.
When they had the nuclear problem in Japan on the Hackerspaces mailing list.
We're expecting you to fix that.
Yeah, they were all trying to figure out how to make a cheap Geiger counter.
Yeah, so there's actually tons and tons of open source Geiger counter stuff. You can even use Arduinos. It's crazy.
Sweet.
They're actually really simple.
So what were the resources you used when you were getting into that, figuring that out?
Speaking of open source, there is actually an open source research consortium of people who build these reactors. So it would not have been for that site, which is called Fuser.net, that I wouldn't have been able to link up with a lot of the people that I was able to. And get such a wealth of information. They've got FAQs on there that pretty much tell you all you need to know. It's pretty crazy. Anymore, most of the people who post questions on there, you know, starting off, most of them have already been covered in FAQs. So if you're interested in this at all, please go read the FAQs, especially if you're thinking about posting, because it's probably in the FAQs, and people will get angry if you ask again. But the FAQs are really, really helpful.
How do you spell that? F-U-Z-E-R?
No,
I know what FAQ is.
F-U-S-O-R.net. F-U-S-O-R.
F-U-S-O-R.net. I got to get them on Floss Weekly. That's going to be so cool.
We're going to be hauling the reactor back to the science track room after this panel, and he's going to be giving an hour-long talk and demo on it for those who want to know more.
Mike, dude, there's a...
Did you do the reactor for school, or did you just do it on your own?
It was kind of related to school because I was so bored. I really needed something to do. Actually, in middle school, I started building jet engines. My dad's an aerospace engineer, so we built several small pulse jets and then a turbine jet. Actually, I saw today that the robotics track had a turbine, jet turbine talk, but I wish I would have seen that earlier. We built a jet turbine, and then sophomore year, I was looking for like next sort of project, and I wanted something that would have a lot of validity, maybe a chance of things that people hadn't researched before. So this provided a really excellent platform, and still does, for something I can wake up in the morning and always see a problem with and try to fix the next thing continuously. Because
speaking from history, a bored teen is a dangerous thing.
Speaking of jet engines and jet turbines, the guy who did on the robotics track has brought that thing up to Freaknik for the last couple of years, and there's some funny videos on the site of him firing up the engine, which is mounted on the back of his pickup truck, and then people with very long sticks sticking marshmallows into the flame, and then flaming napalm-like marshmallows going 100 feet across a parking lot and landing on cars.
Nice.
And I'll tell you what, when he turns that thing on, it's usually, they do it in the dark so you can see it, And so it's 10 o'clock, and you're in the hotel, and suddenly you just hear this. And you're like, what the? Everyone runs to a window to see what's going on. That thing is loud.
Next question from the audience. Thank you for listening to us ramble.
I had a quick question. Talk about security for cell phones and laptops and some of the things that you use to protect your own devices from hackers and whatnot.
Don't run Windows.
Yeah. Yeah, they were just, I just watched some example online about how they were showing how they were taking the patches and reverse engineering so they know what the exact hack is, and then they just run out and do it because no one patches on time.
And turn off anything that's not necessary and that you're not using. Yep. And hitting Google and putting the word securing and then whatever it is you want to secure in there will take you to a lot of step-by-step instructions and checklists. That's a good place to start.
And OpenVPN is your friend. Make sure it gets installed in every box you use. That when you're on a public Wi-Fi network like this, it's at least a little bit harder to break in.
Gentleman over here.
Yeah.
In the corporate space, it's really easy to throw around a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt when it comes to security because your managers have no idea what you're talking about. So I was wondering if y'all could expound upon APTs and if corporations actually have to be concerned about them.
About what?
Advanced persistent threats.
I say no. There was a talk at CarolinaCon this year about APTs, and it was, I really hadn't paid any attention to it lately, and you know they're saying it's all in the news lately, and
APT means what? Advanced persistent threat.
Thank you.
This is one of the right.
Correct.
Right.
Sorry.
Right, exactly. That's why I said no.
We're not drunk yet. It's 101.
Yes.
I'll ask later.
And
I think we had a gentleman over here stand up. So okay, the mic. Mike, gentleman can see you.
Mike Vick is on his way.
I just noticed the very young purple-haired person there in the audience, and I've been cussing like a sailor all night. I'm sorry.
She's kick-ass, though.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just wondering, how long did it take you to make your jet engine?
The jet engine, really the hardest part was getting the turbocharger. I ended up finding one on Craigslist because I was tired of scanning through all of the listings on eBay. Once I had that, I'm fortunate enough to have a lot of... I live in Noonan, which is about 30 miles south of here, and it borders on the redneckish side. So I've got a lot of friends that have welders and scrap metal laying around.
Redneckish.
So there would be weekends where we tear off the hood of a car or something like that and form it into the combustion chamber. So it's all a matter of resources. I think it took us about a month of tweaking. We'd build a combustion chamber and realize that we made it too short or something like that. So we would go back and revise. So about a month or so once you have all of the parts.
Could you bring the jet engine next year?
Absolutely.
That's cool.
All right. Next question.
He's going somewhere.
He's going.
He's going. He's going.
There we go.
I got a question about security.
Okay.
From time to time, I come across situations on the WAN that have flood packages at certain internet gateways. I report it to the ISPs and no action's taken for X amount of time. And then all of a sudden I put on the news and, you know, Jim Bob and whatever, you know, discovers that half the network's been hacked. And I ran across this probably two or three times now, including my own ISP at home. I had actually called DISA, and DISA called me at 3 o'clock in the morning and said, you know, this IP address is from X country. And I said, well, yeah, that's what I'm calling you for. I mean, this is your guys' job, not mine. I pay my monthly fee to you guys, but it's coming and it's hitting, and I'm seeing it just replicate itself over the web. My question to you guys is, how do you get the people that are in control of those ISPs, architecture infrastructures, the Knox Center guys, to pay attention to you. Sony's another one. I mean, those guys, I literally went into a network and actually told them host names of nodes within their network. And I got one guy, he says, oh, hold on, well, I'm in your network. He says, how can you be on network? I said, well, X, Y, and Z. He goes, hold on a second. Put me on hold, comes back on again. Can you see anybody else? I said, yeah, I can see your whole segment. All right, rattle off some more nodes. He says, how do you know all that? I was like, I'm telling you, because if I can see this, and I live in this country, it's open to everybody else out here in the world. Right. And I want you guys to secure it. But of course, they went on, you know, nobody did anything about it. And 6 months later, we have this big old fiasco. I mean, how do you get people that in the structure to actually understand that we know what the hell we're talking about? We're not a bunch of, you know, the stereotypical, you know, hackers in a dungeon somewhere. We're not, you know, in business world. We don't have an actual day job, you know. We're not 10-year-old kids. We're all, you know, we're a diverse population. How do we get people to actually take us seriously?
That's an interesting question.
No easy answer.
I've worked for a company that specialized in hosting websites for, shall we say, of a rather adult nature. And one of the things I learned is that a lot of ISPs, and in particularly places that resell bandwidth, part of their business model, part of the revenue stream depends on things like spam, and things like people trying to hack into sites and basically jacking up bandwidth and usage, and they have a vested financial interest in not containing or controlling that sort of stuff, because if they did, then they'd lose anywhere from 25 to, in some cases, as much as 90% of their revenue, which should give you kind of a scary idea of how much illicit traffic is going over the net these days. And when you make your money selling and reselling bandwidth, the more bandwidth your customers use and have abused, the better off you are. There's not any vested interest in stopping it or shutting it down. That's just my perspective from a particular place I worked at a particular point in time, and I'm sure there's other answers and other perspectives that hopefully are more useful.
And you'd be surprised how often people try to hack into your network at home or even knock on your machines. I had a buddy that didn't believe me, and I had him install a package that would show him every time someone tried to do something against his network. Yeah. And he got so freaked out that he uninstalled it and he shut his machine off every time he wasn't using it because it freaked him out.
Yeah.
It's actually a good thing. Yeah. We got about a few more minutes, Scott.
What if I can answer him a little bit. If you're dealing with people that are attempting to attack your servers, your ISP itself is not going to do a whole lot. No. You have to talk to the originating ISP. That's why so much of the stuff is coming from overseas, because you've got a company that may be hosted in North America or Europe that's then trying to route through someplace in Asia, because they know that it's going to be such a hassle for you to talk to someone at that ISP to shut them down. The abuse department of the ISP is the people that you want to talk to. If it's coming from a North American IP, get in touch with that ISP's abuse department, and they will shut it down. Almost all of the hosting companies that I've dealt with in the U.S., they want to shut down any problems on their network, because if they don't, people start blackholing them.
Yep.
I worked for an ISP, and that was our process, was if somebody started, you know, giving us problems, we just started blackholing subnets. And suddenly nobody can reach their legitimate websites. And that's a serious money problem. So.
But it's easy to spoof those. So, you know, it's tough. We had a server, Windows, get hacked at work. And as I'm going through all the log files, I'm watching this hack happen. And it shows that it's originating from probably 10 different IPs in 10 different countries, you know, and it wasn't. They were just bouncing off of other servers.
Although with botnets, it's actually possible.
Well, yeah, probably.
We're going to have to kind of wrap up here with the next couple minutes, and Chad's going to take over, and I guess we'll end with him playing with the fusion reactor. Reminder again, Hacking 201 in the EFF track room tomorrow night at 10 p.m. The more you donate, the more you're going to drink. So there's the donation bucket right there. Plug, plug.
So in the white bag here, I have a piece of uranium from the Shinkalobwe mine in Africa, which is a place that back when, you know, a couple million years ago went critical, actually. So this stuff is really, really hot. I'm going to put it under...
Ow!
That hurt. That would have been a story for the surviving science earlier today. 5 kilovolts kind of stings. So I'm going to do a quick measure of gamma over a minute from this piece of uranium. And then I'm going to generate some x-rays from the fuser and compare it and show you how toasty I can get with x-rays with this system. Okay, so I'm sorry, I'll explain this. The brown box is a radiation detector. It's hooked up to this metal tube, which is a Geiger tube. So basically, each of these numbers is every time a gamma particle hits that tube. So this is just counts of radiation, essentially. It's nice and healthy. Notice the height of the reactor. Always above waist level. Okay, so we've got a measly 1,000 counts. Let's get some serious business going on here. All right, I need to get it in the right vacuum pressure sort of range. All of this will be explained in my next talk. All right, so flip the power supply on. Turn up to 20,000 volts and turn this back on. Way too low in terms of vacuum pressure. Let a little bit of air in. Wait for it. It gets better, I promise. Sorry, it gets kind of tricky trying to keep the vacuum pressure in the right sort of range. It's all right. Don't worry about it. It's fairly normal stuff.
Containment breach!
Down in front, please. Come on. All right, there we go. Oh, there we go. Yeah, so now we're cooking. Uranium is pretty wimpy, basically. Something worth stating, though, is that the x-rays coming out of this are directly proportional to the energy we're putting into the chamber. So currently we're at 35,000 volts, which is actually pretty good. But the tolerance of this is about close to a quarter inch stainless steel, the chamber. X-rays won't actually penetrate that chamber until about 50,000 volts. So all of the x-rays we're measuring right now are coming out of a glass viewport that's on the front. And so all of the radiation is going that way right now, which is really nice. It's easy to shield myself from gamma radiation. So 800,000 counts of gammas. Toasty. But yeah, I'm going to be doing a run of this actually producing neutrons. I'll swap over to the neutron tubes and we'll smash some atoms, create a little star. I'm going to have a camera on the viewport, so you'll actually be able to see what's going on inside of the chamber. And yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. I'll explain sort of how the operating principle of this is, how it works, and why I chose to get into this and where I'm going with it. So hope to see you there.